T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Anthony Slater writes for The Athletic, and what if I told you, everybody, that the Warriors haven't bothered beating the Houston Rockets yet this year? I don't know if that bothers you. I don't even know if it bothers me. I don't know if it's going to bother me if they lose again tonight, knowing that Kevin Durant's not playing. So what is to be discerned from tonight's performance? The man who sits on top of it all, Anthony Slater, good enough to join us. Anthony, what kind of stock are you putting into tonight's results, if any at all? I've seen players putting up bulletin board material on both sides of the aisle, but I don't know what it really means anymore. I mean, the Warriors have spent so much time convincing me none of this matters. I think I believe them now.
Yeah, I mean, look, they were 13 games worse than the Rockets last year or something. I mean, I don't remember the final tally, but, you know, the Rockets ran away with the one seed and game set, you know, that was all to get game 7 in Houston, and the Warriors won game 7 in Houston. So, you can't take much. And then also this season, the games have been weird. I remember the first game in Houston was right after the Draymond KD, spat in LA. It was the first game. Draymond came back from suspension. Steph didn't play. And they got swept on that whole Texas trip. They went 0-3. Then obviously you had the game at home where they blew that. I think it was like 8-point lead in the last couple minutes. They were taking quick threes. It was very poor execution late. They should have won that. I mean, all the games seem to have had some type of caveat, and every single game has missed a big piece. Harden obviously missed that one. The Rockets won recently. Curry missed one. Paul missed one. And then tonight KD's out. So that kind of takes away from any. I was pumped to see both sides have all their people, but that's not even going to happen.
Hey, Anthony, it's Matt Kolsky. If we're looking at it that way, and I think we all kind of have, and it certainly seems like the Warriors have, and in a way that kind of means none of this ever means anything until we get to the playoffs. But I guess the part of it that I don't really buy that some people are trying to sell is that everything is normal. Because it may not matter a ton right now, but there is something weird going on here. Is there not? This does not seem to me to be just nothing more than we don't care and it'll go away as soon as the playoffs get here.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think that's a Rockets-related thing. I just think that's...
Right, no, that's in general.
That's a dynasty kind of maybe splintering a little bit at the end. Like every single one in the history of the sport has, you know, towards the end, obviously the Shaq Kobe, the third year of that second three-peat, Steve Kerr always talks about kind of how that last season was. They're even going to have a documentary coming out on ESPN. This is just, I just think the personalities eventually grate on people, and there's maybe different agendas at times, and, everyone's kind of going, there are different ways, it seems like. Obviously, the Kevin Durant thing is lingering over all of it, and Draymond Green put that on Front Street in L.A. early in the season. And that's just, it's clearly wearing on them. And I do think that is a concern as they head towards the playoffs. I just don't think that's necessarily matchup based.
Anthony Slater here on 95.7 The Game. So Draymond Green, give him all credit in the world, man. When asked about Steve Kerr being caught on camera saying disparaging things and using an F-bomb about Draymond being tired of his act, he took the high road today, man. He did nothing to express any anger. He tried to dismiss it. He said that Steve didn't even owe him an apology. It wasn't even worth these two grown men discussing it. Lip reading happens when cameras are pointed at you and everything's fine. These are normal statements that are made in every NBA locker room, on every NBA sideline. You know, I do. I tip my cap to Draymond for getting out of the way of this one and just letting it slide.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's two things. He's one, he's really good with the media, and he's really good with his messaging, and he plans what he's going to say beforehand, and he knew he was going to have to talk yesterday, and he didn't just go in and was surprised by a question. Like, he came in to say that, number one, and two, he's not hypocritical. How could he sit there and be like, oh, I was appalled that Steve said that, when the reality is he dresses people down on the bench all the time? That is what lingers over what we were talking about earlier, what he did to Kevin Durant on the bench earlier this season. So he would sound, he would have, he knew that he would kind of sound like a hypocrite if he acted like it really bothered.
Now, all the compliments to Draymond aside, as this team is looking to improve defensively, doesn't that fall on him more than anyone else? I mean, anybody. You're the guy. You are War Daddy. It's up to you to be the defensive, draw the line in the sand, no more of this nonsense guy. Is he that guy right now? Can he still be that guy?
I think we'll know in April, you know, because he didn't have a good defensive season last year. And then he was awesome against the Spurs in the first round. You remember him guarding Aldridge in that series? I remember game one. It was like, oh, okay, never mind. This is a different Draymond Green than we've seen in the last few months. Obviously, the body is not where it was a few years ago. I watched some playoff games, so just like random, you know, NBA TVs. They'll just be showing some hardwood classics from Warriors playoffs a few years ago. He looked like a different athlete out there. A bit skinnier and just, you know, just younger and flying around more. And I'm not sure he has that yet. I think just the NBA miles have taken a bit of a toll. And he is, you know, he tries to save himself in the regular season. And that's why you don't see him being that. But at some point, he's not going to be the top-level playoff defender that he has been. He proved he was last year. We'll see come April.
So if we're talking about defense, obviously DeMarcus Cousins has come under a lot of fire and I think does deserve some of the defense he's getting from teammates and elsewhere, just in that in the past, I think effort and focus have been a problem for DeMarcus. And I think the problem here is much more just his natural physical limits at this point, and he's being taken advantage of to some degree. And I think there's an idea that that is a huge reason why Andrew Bogut was brought aboard. But my question to you would be, does Bogut, obviously he's a better defender than Cousins, don't get me wrong, but does he really solve the main problem, which is that DeMarcus can't move well enough to switch out onto the perimeter and teams are going to attack him with that come playoff time? Wouldn't Bogut be susceptible to the same things? Isn't the answer to that Kevon Looney?
Yeah, and it will be. Or Jordan Bell.
Right.
Jordan Bell's had some nice little moments in the last couple weeks. Or Draymond Green playing center, which I think is going to happen a lot more in the playoffs. And that means Andre Iguodala's on the floor. And they've been good defensively with Iguodala on the floor this year. I think like a 103 rating, which is really good. You know, that's what you're saying about Bogut's right, though. I mean, not only is he limitations, the Warriors say he's in really good shape, but the last time we saw him in the NBA, he was unplayable for the Lakers and got cut. And went over to Australia, obviously, that got himself in better shape. But, you know, we'll see with him. The same thing with Bogut is the thing with Cousins, and I think we're seeing it. He matches up much better just against bigger guys. I think the Denver matchup we saw the other day was very good for DeMarcus because he can just sit there and guard Jokic and kind of put his body on Jokic and deal with, like, post-ups. And, you know, I think those are the good matchups for both Cousins and Bogut when maybe, let's say, they play the Thunder in a playoff series and it's Steven Adams. Where it's the concern or matchups like you're going to see tonight with Houston where DeMarcus has never the difference with him defensively, I think, this year that he's trying to get used to, not only obviously he's coming off the Achilles, but he's used to playing with other bad defenders. So offensive game plans aren't just, hey, let's only go after that guy right there every time. But the problem on the Warriors is if you were, you know, scheming against them, you're just going to attack Cousins every time because he's like the only bad defender on the court a lot of times.
If we could truth serum the locker room, which loss disturbed the locker room more? Boston waking him up? Or Phoenix, who's just been terrible all year?
Probably Phoenix, because, like you said, Boston's like, all right, whatever, there's a wake-up call. Boston played unbelievable in that game. Like, Gordon Hayward couldn't miss out of nowhere.
It might be Gordon Hayward's best game in the NBA. Like, not with the Celtics, but as a pro.
He has some good ones. Man, he's an all-star.
He's really
good.
You're
right. I mean, he was awesome.
He was awesome.
In that game. Definitely his best game since, you know, going down with that group injury. But the Phoenix one, they beat Phoenix what, like 18 straight times. And just I remember, like, Klay Thompson was just disgusted that they had lost to the Suns post game, and not only that had came after all of this chatter about how they were going to focus up and it was playoff time, it's time to lock in, which came after the Boston game. So they told us they were going to focus more, and then they lost to the worst team in the Western Conference.
Your coworker Marcus Thompson said the pressure to make sure the Warriors get their act together, so to speak, for the playoffs is on head coach Steve Kerr. Do you agree with that?
I mean, he's one of a few that it is. You know, we just talked about Draymond, the pressure Draymond faces in the playoffs. I think KD is pressurized to just kind of prove that he's at least all the way in for, you know, these last few months, even if he's going to leave. Steph is always under fire. He'll get some criticism if he has a, you know, struggling playoffs. As you guys know, Clay, maybe he's the one that kind of skates away from any type of pressure. But, yeah, you know, Steve's right up there. He gets heavily criticized for rotations at times. It's just when you're dealing in the environment they are, every major player has some type of pressure kind of like latched onto them when they enter the playoff.
Final question for you, Anthony. Who starts tonight for Durant? Any line on that yet?
No, I guess McKinney. Although McKinney,
I mean, like, aren't we over that? I mean, that's not quite working. Like, can I see Andre Iguodala slip in?
Alfonso McKinney
can
alone.
Can I see Andre Iguodala slide into the starting lineup?
Do they want to give Andre Iguodala 30 minutes in a regular season game?
Though? No.
Well, and if it's a statement game,
is it? I mean, like, they don't view it like that, though. I mean, if they viewed it like that, Kevin Durant was playing tonight, because I saw him in practice last night. He was, you know, doing his normal shooting routine and not limping at all on the right ankle. It's clear they're kind of floating into this game like they're floating into other games as far as are the stakes raised. Maybe it's Iguodala. I mean, that would tell us something. That would tell us that they are taking it a bit more serious. But, you know, Iguodala is going to get his 25 minutes regardless off the bench or not.
All right.
But, I don't know, maybe it's Damian Lee. You know, that's at least they can spread the floor a bit more.
Always good to talk to you, Anthony. Thank you so much.
All right, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Anthony Slater here on 95.7.
Can't believe the disrespect for Alfonso McKinney.
Like, I like McKinney, but, you know, I mean,
it's Chicago's own.
Can we please, I mean, stop pretending? I mean, it's a nice story.
He rebounds, he defends, and he occasionally knocks in a three.
And I love bringing him off the bench to do all that. Starting him in place of Kevin Durant leaves a bit of a gap. Wanting just a little bit more. How about this? More with NFL free agency coming up. We're going to get deep into all Kansas City issues, players who are still there, players who have already been traded for. Sarin Petro joins us at 4:30 tonight, and he is Mr. Kansas City as a host out there, and he will have the skinny for us on all of those things. When we come on back, though, I do have, and I don't know if you've heard this anywhere today, the latest example of LeBron James jumping the shark. We're going to do that next, right after Gianna, here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
So we're going to get back to the NFL. Our friend Sarin Petro from Kansas City joins me in just a little bit. Matt Kolsky joining me here today, the rest of the week on 95.7 The Game. It's been a LeBron-free week, pretty much, on the program. Here is your one LeBron segment, only because it's like, come on, man. Come on. You don't need to do this now.
We need the NFL Network sounder or whatever. Come on, man.
Come on, man. LeBron James and the Lakers are heading to Toronto.
Oh, that's normal.
And, well, you know, they're going to play the Raptors, so
sure.
I get what they're doing.
Yeah.
The King, LeBron James, is making his return to Toronto, and he is hosting at his favorite club. I have...
I'm sorry, what now?
No. So, look, professional athletes, the way... strippers, the way pop stars, the way IG models get cracked off in the off season, several thousands of dollars to come in and just be somebody to ooh and awe at the VIP section.
Totally.
So, you know, look, we were talking about first concerts we ever saw, first concerts earlier
today.
And Elena told us her very first concert, I think at Oracle Arena, was Britney Spears. I don't know if it was your first, but you saw her over there. The only time I've ever seen Britney Spears in person is because I was in Pure one night in Vegas and she was there, like VIP section. And look, I could care less about Britney Spears, but even I'd be like, all right, that's a bona fide celebrity that, you know, Entertainment Tonight is talking about
it
right now.
And she was paid a lot of money to be there, probably.
She was probably paid a ton to be there, right? So this is very normal. And for athletes, they get into the mix during their off seasons and they do these things all the time. And you know what? I would, too. Are you telling me you're going to pay me to show up and party tonight? That sounds like a great Saturday night in an off season.
Now, what is it I have to do? Sit in the VIP and drink heavily? Okay.
You gotta look there. Cool. Well, it's sponsored by Grey Goose, so you better not be drinking Stoli. You know what I mean? Free entry for industry unprofessionals. a rotation of Toronto's finest DJs, all two of them, and weaving in a mix of old school and current hip hop. Oh, that's good because you can't have one without the other.
It's gonna be Drake
all
night.
You gotta know where you've been if
old
you want to know.
New school Drake.
Admission is free before 11:30, which means this is before a game night, and they plan on going late. This sounds like it's till at least 4 or 5 a.m. $500 minimum for table reservation, and each bottle allows 3 complimentary admissions. Now, what is the one thing about this that stands out to me? I was trying, flipping through my mental Rolodex of memories. I can't think of one player that I've ever heard of in basketball in season signing up to be the host of a party on the road.
Now, we should be clear about this because there's two separate things in my mind. One is, well, what does it affect his game tomorrow? And to that, I say two things. Number one, I don't care. The Lakers stink. And number two, we do have plenty of history of NBA players being out till 5 a.m. the night before a basketball game.
Sure.
So that is not out of the ordinary. The problem here is the optics. The problem here is you're just supposed to go out till 5 a.m., do your thing, don't throw a giant party and make a whole scene out of staying out till 4 in the morning the night before a game on the road, because that just looks terrible.
Well, and the question is, well, what are you celebrating?
Oh.
What are you celebrating? The first summer you're ever going home early? Is that what you're here celebrating? I just don't understand it, and I guess when you get to a certain level, you no longer care what people think, you no longer care what optics might look like, you no longer care. But to me, the lesson here is that Rob Pelinka, Magic Johnson, have zero control over this guy. Zero. And to another LeBron story, to bring it back to the Bay Area, you know, LeBron, who has got nobody to tell him what to do in the organization that he's now playing for, certainly doesn't have a manager who's about to tell him what to do, because there's no way anybody at Clutch Sports. There's nobody at Clutch Sports who outranks LeBron James at Clutch Sports.
No.
So there's literally nobody telling this guy what to do at any point in time, or even leaning in his ear and going, dude, that's a bad look. Like, you know, we're probably going to get our asses kicked against Toronto. It's a bad look to be out late the night before. It's a bad look to be, you know, IGing, Instagram accounting, 4 a.m. recording sessions with Travis Scott like the night before a game. It doesn't mean you're not going to play well tomorrow night. I don't know, because the whole year's gone belly up. But, like, for the sake of your own brand, and for the sake of being a good teammate, just don't do this, man.
Right. It's all that stuff, because I don't think it affects the basketball. If we're quite honest, he's playing at 8 p.m. Pacific time tomorrow night. If he finishes partying at 4, he's in bed at 5, he can sleep till 3 in the afternoon, he's going to be fine. And if you just... One thing I don't like to do is pick on these guys for being up late, because I'm a guy who likes to stay up late. As long as you get enough sleep at some point and show up for work, that doesn't matter to me. It's the look of, in the midst of the first time you're missing the playoffs in 15 years, in the midst of a Lakers team that thought they were resurrecting themselves and is 5 games under 500 right now, you're going to host a party?
It's an abnormal thing to do under the best of circumstances.
That's right. And he's too smart not to realize it.
And it's a very abnormal thing to do under the worst of circumstances. Plus, whatever the benefit is here, whatever he is being paid to make this appearance, that's an insult to the concept of pocket change for this man.
It's not about the money.
Exactly. This is about wanting to show everybody he can do whatever he wants, regardless of whatever anybody thinks at any point in time. And I guess that's how he flexes on us, since he won't be able to flex on anybody come playoffs. And another thing, too, like, you're about to have more time to party than you've ever had before, LeBron. Can't you just wait a few weeks?
Apparently not. It's so LeBron.
You think Lonzo Ball is invited?
Lonzo?
You think he's invited?
Probably not on the guest list. How about this? The only other NBA player who's on the list is probably Anthony Davis.
I did check the schedule, and the Pelicans are off till Friday, so I'm just saying.
He could take a charter
up there. How great would that be if we got video of LeBron in a Toronto club with Anthony Davis from tonight?
You know, this stuff ends up on TMZ and Instagram anyway. At least he's just letting us know up front where he's going to be, what's happening. He's getting paid for it, and hey, you can maybe hang out.
Yeah, don't put your name on the marquee, man. Don't put your name on the marquee.
He's not worried about it, though.
Obviously not. And you know what? Good for him.
You know what would be a lot cooler? sliding in the back door like a cool cat, and no one even knew you were there.
That's right.
Like, that's what the baller does. The baller doesn't tell you anything that's about to happen. Things just happen. Anyways.
Wait a second. Where'd he come from? That's the guy you want to be.
Right. Having said all this, with all criticisms, if LeBron were to text me right now and be like, Damon, can you get here?
Yes.
I'd probably take 2 days off of work and go to the party myself. So let's be totally honest. Damon, do you think J.R. Smith is bartending? Every now and then the text line.
Seriously, J.R. Smith hasn't been seen since the Cavs sent him home.
He's got the bottle of Henny. He's ready to go. We do know that. This is Eamon? How are you in Milpitas?
Hey, what's going on, Damon? Thanks for the line.
You got it.
Looking at some of the transactions the Niners have had, I would like some of that Grey Goose or Stoli or whatever.
You're ready to go start drinking.
Out. Quick question, or quick comment, though, on without trying to hyperventilate with a lot of the things that have happened with the Niners. I mean, if they were going to pay money to a running back, there was one right there with fresh legs, right for the picking, and we passed on Le'Veon Bell. That frustrates me. Number two, with the draft being what it is and how Lynch has produced in the draft, I mean, if he was looking for a pass rusher, there was one guy in Kansas City that got waived recently. They could have easily picked him up and just negotiated that number one pick to get Odell Beckham from the Giants, just like what the Browns did. And, I mean, the reason why I'm saying this is that last year, 49er fans, do you guys have amnesia? Do you want to go to Levi's Stadium, the giant erector set on the east side, and get hotter every time Jimmy G can't find any weapons downfield or to hand off to? I mean, it's very frustrating to watch a franchise quarterback without any weapons. And, Damon, I'll take your comments offline in what I'm about to say. I know what you were saying about how the Rams rotated their defense to keep them fresh, and the Eagles stacked their defense with pass rushers and interior linemen. But you know what? Neither team was hoisting the Super Bowl trophy last year. The best way to keep your defense fresh, keep them off the field. And they won't be able to do that because Jimmy G has no one besides his tight end to throw to and questionable running backs. And right, that's all I got, Damon. And you guys have a good night.
I appreciate your call, man. Thank you very much. And let me just say, when you haven't seen the sunny side of six wins, and as long as the 49ers have been looking for it, then you just, like, I don't want to hear about, well, you know, these other teams did it, and all they were playoff teams.
But also, the Eagles stacked their line over the last several years, which includes a Super Bowl victory. What are we talking about here?
Right. So, the team, what you don't want to be is the team that won the Super Bowl 2 years ago or was just in the Super Bowl last year. Like, that you just labeled is not good enough for me, which is insane.
Right.
Which is clinically insane when you look at where the 49ers are. I mean, you know all your warm and fuzzy memories about the 49ers? You know what they sound like to me now, honestly? And this is, there's a lot, maybe it is appropriate that the 49ers went out and signed a guy who went to Indiana, because Indiana basketball, in the same time frame that the 49ers, you see, the 49ers were very much a blue blood in the NFL, and they could measure themselves with the greats of the greats. They can sit there and say the 49ers stand shoulder to shoulder with, you know, the Packers, the Bears, the New York Giants, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the Dallas Cowboys. You are among the royalty.
Yep.
I used to think Indiana basketball, man. Oh. Indiana basketball. Well, and it was for a long time. Yeah. Indiana basketball was as blue blood as UCLA, as Kansas, as Kentucky, North Carolina, Duke, Syracuse. You know, it was as blue blood, a blue blood program that you could find. Check the last 20 years. We're no longer in that. Like, I had to make this realization on a show that I do every now and then when they talk to me about this stuff. And I said, look, what I remember Indiana being isn't what they are anymore. What you remember the 49ers being, some of you are still comparing this team and their goal and their set of accomplishments to the dynasty. They are so far removed from that. The 49ers are now among the bottom-dwelling teams in the sport.
Five times in the last 20 years you've had a winning record. five times in 20 years. I mean, it's that simple. 20 years, five times you were over 500. So you've been one of the worst teams in football for two decades.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, what you think you are and what you actually are two different things. And I feel like the 49ers, they conduct business as if they are who they still used to be. And you're not that anymore. I mean, to me, the Niners, they might have this built-in fan base that they say they move close to. That's not represented on game day. I don't feel more 49er fans packing into Levi's than I did Candlestick. And I don't even want to go down that road, to be totally honest with you. But it's just, at least the Hoosiers still play in Assembly Hall. I got that going for me. I got all those memories when I walk in. You don't even have memories when you walk in anymore. The Niners are far, far, far removed from who they used to be. And unfortunately, the York ownership group steps up to the plate, usually takes a big swing, and usually strikes out. As a matter of fact, they connected once and then sabotaged that own connection in Jim Harbaugh. So what disturbs me and scares me and what keeps me up at night, and this just doesn't apply to the Niners, but I'm going to apply this to really all sports. What's really wrong with Major League Baseball? What's really wrong with some of the NBA? And what's really wrong with the NFL? It's that teams' finances are no longer tied to on-field success or failure. The contract deal, the merchandising deal, and lording over all of it, the television contract, has these teams, look at it this way, since the Niners stopped being the we win everything that's in front of us San Francisco 49ers, they have vaulted into the top five of NFL valuations. Since they started losing like the Browns, they're now as valuable as they've ever been. So winning has nothing to do with their value any longer. And I think Jed knows that. And I see business moves that almost sign off on that when I look around.
Yeah, but I do think that his most recent football move was to empower a guy who at the time was the best head coaching candidate available on the market and the GM that head coaching candidate wanted, and to empower them for a long enough period to give them the leeway to rebuild this thing. So it may be that those guys don't work out, but I don't think this one's on Jed York, actually. I think he did the right thing. Now, he may have made the wrong hire.
Finally, but he made 14 horrifically bad decisions before he finally did the one right thing.
It was a long time.
And do you see how long it's taking, if this is the one right thing, to undo the damage he caused?
Yeah, no doubt.
It's nuts. It's nuts. It really is. 888-957-9570. Dave is in Oakland. How are you, Dave?
What's going on, DB?
Doing well.
Hello?
Give it to me, Dave. What do you got?
Hey, first off, of course, we all hate Jed. But I got to say, for what we did solving our biggest two problems, right? Then we go and sign Tevin Coleman. Then we go, you know, Jimmy Ward barely stays on the field, mediocre at best. But we did all that. And we still have $46 million, and I only included the max deals for Tevin Coleman and Jimmy Ward. Those deals, you know, we haven't seen the guarantees. We still have $46 million.
Look, if they turn around without swinging. Well, I tell you what, Dave, thank you very much. Unfortunately, we got to you right as our guest showed up. Surin Petro is host of the program on Sports Radio 810 in Kansas City. And whenever you got a Kansas City question, this is the guy to talk to. Surin, welcome to the Damon Bruce Show. My pal and colleague, Matt Kolsky, is hanging out with me here today. And it's good to have you on, man. How you doing?
Damon, Matt, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. Happy to talk a little D-Ford, huh? Give you all the good and the bad.
Yeah, so let's start with the good. The good is his age, his size, his sack total, his speed, and the bad prevented you from going to the Super Bowl last year. So how do you feel about the guy?
Yeah, you know, listen, that's an isolated incident, but it also is a little bit of a snapshot. So a number of different things you hit on, right? First of all, his size. I think they're listing him at like 252. I would say that's generous at best. So, you know, one of the things we were talking about today are the 49ers staying in a 4-3 or going to a 3-4. He played DN in a 4-3 at Auburn, so he knows how to play with his hand in the ground. He played 3-4 his whole time here in Kansas City as a stand-up guy. Occasionally, he'd put his hand down and come after the quarterback. So I think that's going to be interesting. What are they going to ask him to do? He can do it. I mean, he's got a background in either way you want him to play. But what he really is an up-the-field, straight-line speed rusher. His secondary moves, you know, let me know when you see one. It's pretty much a straight up the field and turn the corner. But became very effective at taking the ball away and really grew a lot in his fifth year. Now, the Chiefs fans that are saying, who cares, so what, he left, will tell you that he was an oft-injured guy that doesn't play the run. And I can tell you that this was his best year against the run. And it was passable, right? That would be the optimistic view, is passable against the run. He is not going to set the edge. He is not going to blow up a double team and turn the running back inside. That's just not what he does. But he's got a great speed rush. He does have a nose for the football and will knock the football away and create turnovers. But you're going to be a bit of a liability in the run game. And the question is, are they going to play him at DN or are they going to play him at outside linebacker? Great guy. Super nice guy. But one of those guys I think would never, ever play for the New England Patriots because his whole life is not about football. He loves music. He has other interests. He's kind of a well-rounded individual, which sometimes, and sometimes accurately so, gets labeled as a guy who doesn't take the game serious enough, which I think would be an accurate portrayal when you're lined up offsides on the most important down of the season for a football team. So there's a lot to like, right? I don't think the Chiefs wanted to spend that number on him. I think they would have gladly kept him on a one-year deal. I don't think they were going to give him a multi-year deal because they've had a lot of games where he wasn't playing or he didn't do some of the things they wanted. But last year was fantastic. If you get D4 from last year, he's worth the contract for what he does in the pass rush. If you get the whole five-year D4, you overpaid for him.
Look, your defense is the reason you didn't go to the Super Bowl. And there's a lot not to like in that secondary, but the pass rush led the NFL with 52 sacks. So why are the Chiefs moving on from both D4 and Houston?
So I think it's a combination of things. One, yes, they were number one in quantity of sacks. Also, with their offense, they had maybe the most opportunities to sack the quarterback. As far as sack efficiency, they were eighth, right? Still good. Still top quarter of the NFL. But, you know, the statement that they're number one in sacks, I think, is a little bit misleading if you don't drill down a little bit further into the numbers. And D4 does that. He's very, very good at that part of the game. The question and why the Chiefs would let him go. And realistically, look, they could have let him walk in free agency and they would have probably gotten a compensation of a bottom third pick as far as compensation picks go the following year. So why did they hang on to him? Well, they thought they could get more. Did they get more? Yeah, it might end up only being a handful of picks more. But yes, from a Brett Veach, the general manager of the Chiefs standpoint, they got more than what they would have gotten in letting him walk. Why did they let him walk? Well, five-year deal going into age 28, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, right? I think that, you know, all deals are really a three-year deal. So you're talking about 28, 29, 30, and a history of not being healthy. You know, last year was the first year he played 16 games, and there were a couple of times that he was down on the field, and the reaction was, okay, well, there goes D4 for the next two games. You know, he's battled leg injuries. He's had a back injury, which scares everybody. Again, 16 games last year. Looks like he's over it. Quality character, yes. He's not going to be a malcontent in the locker room. Never had any off-the-field problems. But he's not one of those guys that appears to eat, sleep, and breathe football. But if you want a guy to roar off the edge and come after the quarterback and get the speed rush going, he's that guy. The question is, you know, I think a lot of it will be on, does the defensive coordinator use him properly? You mentioned what the Chiefs have done. They cut Justin Houston largely because he's 30 and because of the cap number. They cut Eric Berry, same thing, 30 and the cap number, and both of them have had a lot of injuries. I think the Chiefs are trying to get younger and more athletic, and I think they would have been happy to stay with D4 had the 49ers not offered better than the third-round pick at some point in the draft. And I think which year is overrated. Certainly this year is more valuable to a fan, but to a general manager, second round, that's got security. Second-round pick's a second-round pick. So they know this year's 49er pick will probably be higher than next year's, But they made the move because they decided, look, we're going to a 4-3. We see him as a 3-4 outside linebacker. The injury, the back, you know, how much is he going to be really focused in? Those are all question marks. The 49ers have a need, and I think he'll fill that need for them. You know, everybody wants to make somebody a winner and a loser and somebody a villain and a hero, and the reality is the NFL doesn't work that way. He's a good speed rusher that does not set the edge and does not play the run really well, but is a good guy, and you won't have to worry about an Alden Smith-like situation in San Francisco.
Our guest is Kansas City radio host Soren Petro, and you mentioned Eric Berry, another guy cut loose by the Kansas City defense. And obviously, look, we all know how good he can be when he's on the field. He has not been on the field all that much, but as someone who's closer to that situation over the past couple years, looking at a Niners team that's missed out on a lot of the big safeties and certainly needs some help in that spot, knowing what you know, would you take a flyer on an Eric Berry? Would you take a risk and cross your fingers that he's healthy?
So the way the injury report works in the NFL, if you know a guy's not going to play for 6 weeks, you put him on the IR with a possibility to return. The Chiefs didn't do that. They suddenly in camp, the first few days of training camp, after a full year lost with the Achilles tendon injury, had a situation where they called him day-to-day. They started calling him day-to-day in the last days of July, and we're still calling him day-to-day into the month of December. I mean, that is a communication problem for an organization of players. You know, fans may not realize it. The old days was probably too team-controlled. You talked only to the team-controlled doctors. That's it. They told you this is how it's going to be, and you did it. Nowadays, with the HIPAA laws and everything that everybody has out there, you go to your own doctor. Players are afforded to go to their own doctor. The Chiefs spent all year saying the right thing. They clearly did not want to get sideways with Eric Berry. They said, he's day-to-day, he's working hard, the communication's great, we really love what he's doing, he's such a great player, we love him, we love him, we love him. But at the end of the day, he was day-to-day for about 5 months. And he's still got some problem with his heel. Everybody in Kansas City expected you go through this whole season and finally get healthy at the end of the year, or healthy enough to play, or you've just been not risking further injury to where now you're going to go for it for a chance to get to the Super Bowl in your hometown of Atlanta. Then everyone assumed immediately after the season you would undergo surgery. If you can't play for 13 weeks and all of training camp, then surgery must be needed. And now they come to the conclusion that, no, no, we're not going to have surgery. He said some kind of things that were semi-bizarre as far as, well, I talked to my family about whether or not this was the right week to come back. I didn't really feel it. My spirit didn't say this is the right week. So he did not play against the Baltimore Ravens, came back against the Chargers, played a half of football, played the next week, then sat out a game, then played in the playoffs. I can tell you this. He played in three games coming down the stretch, and the Chiefs were 0-3. But Chiefs were always hoping that he would have that Bob Sanders with the Colts effect of a defense that wasn't good, but he would be the final piece of the puzzle that would make them good. They weren't good. They had some moments with Eric Berry on the field, but at the end of the day against the AFC champion, New England Patriots, world champion New England Patriots, they had an opportunity to stop them and win the football game. And the New England Patriots twice picked on Eric Berry on the final drive in overtime with Rob Gronkowski, a player that's not what he used to be. And that's how they lost the game in week six, was they got beat with a backup safety on him. And everyone said, well, Eric Berry's back. That will be handled. It wasn't handled. So is he the player he was in his prime? Absolutely not. Can you count on him to play? I don't think so. Not at all. If you want to take a flyer on it, good luck. But you better absolutely trust your medical people, and you better think you have an absolute connection to Eric Berry and know that he is going to go out there and play, because he was day-to-day for the better part of 3 or 4 months. That is a really, really questionable situation if you want to go down that road.
Soren, always love talking to you, man. Thank you so much for coming on. We're up against it, though. So 30 seconds. Is Patrick Mahomes already more popular than George Brett?
Yes. George Brett times Bo Jackson plus Len Dawson. That's how you get the total of what Patrick Mahomes is there in Kansas City. He's all of it. He's a quarterback. He's a highlight reel. He is everything. He is the most popular athlete in the history of the city already.
So, like, if you had to trade the barbecue recipes or Mahomes, goodbye barbecue?
We're not giving up barbecue. We own barbecue. We are barbecue. Hell no. Nothing's bigger than barbecue.
There you go. That is the correct answer, and that's why he's the king of Kansas City himself. He is Soren Petro. Whenever there, when you're on, go ahead and stream your hearts away. The man, the myth, the legend. Soren, thank you very much.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good to talk to you. Sarin Petro, all things Kansas City. That is your source right there. And when it comes to five before fives, we have a source, and she's right here.
Some things you need to know. Some things you want to know. It's 5 before 5 on 95.7 The Game.
Hello, Gianna.
Hello. We are brought to you by the California Academy of Sciences. By the way, get ready for Dino Days coming up just around the corner. CalAcademy.org to get information and tickets.
Love it.
Number one.
All right. Maybe you'll love this as well. Klay Thompson clearing the air on his recent comments about Dub Nation last, I think it was last week or earlier this week. He had a couple things to say that the fans were getting up at Oracle, weren't getting excited enough. And he says, quote, I love Dub Nation. We have the greatest fan base in sports. I meant no disrespect. Again, this is on his criticism of Warriors fans. So a couple things here. Are Warriors fans spoiled? Did he really need to clear the air I mean, do we need to hear this? Like, we get your Clay.
Love means never having to say you're sorry. And I'll tell you, Klay Thompson has more, I think, maybe even more than Steph Curry, has more house credit with Golden State Warrior fans than ever before, because cool matters, and Klay leads the league in cool. He really does.
100%.
I don't think he needed to issue the apology, but the fact that he did when he realized once he stepped in, it just shows you how Klay Thompson really is almost the perfect NBA player.
If love means never having to say you're sorry, great lovers do it anyway.
There you go.
Hashtag Claytheism.
Wow.
There you go.
Okay.
Klay Thompson is phenomenal at every aspect of being a professional athlete, and this just shows you how good he is at it.
I was thinking too, can you imagine the reaction if KD had said something like that about the fans? I mean, he would have been
public crucifixion.
But no question.
He wouldn't have apologized.
No, it would have just been that, and that's it.
Number two.
Okay, moving on. Speaking of the Warriors, by the way, Dubs coming up here just a few minutes. Dubs and Rockets Warriors Live coming up at 5 o'clock tomorrow. Head coach Steve Kerr joins the show at 3:30, so make sure you mark it down. So on Monday, March 18th, the Warriors and Chasen are going to hold a press conference. They will tip off their reveal week, basically showcasing the first slate of top tier shows that will perform at Chase Center this fall.
We get to find out who opens Chase Center.
We get to find out who opens. The first day will be on Monday. And apparently there will be quote unquote performers of the first show that will be announced in attendance. So I'm going to go because I'm super excited. To find out who the first, it's got to be someone big.
What if you walk in there and the performers that they have attending are the News, and it's going to be Huey Lewis in the News
but Huey's
opening
not
Chase
there?
Center? But no, Huey, they're saving him. They're saving him for the opening night.
I love Huey, by the way.
I love Huey Lewis in the News. It's the most soulful sounding white boy of all time.
Side note: my husband's band, the Mother Truckers, that he was in, actually went on tour with Huey Lewis.
That is cool.
Yeah, they opened up for him.
Okay,
there's so much to unpack about what was just said in that last like 10 seconds.
Right. Let's talk about Chase Center.
It's got to be a big deal though, right? It's got to be a big band.
It's got to be huge. It's got to be mega. Does it need to be Bay?
My first thought was Metallica.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be awesome.
It's a great,
That would be
start.
Them saying, we get it.
Right.
We get it. But I just don't know if a building that is going for the super duper cool factor is wired to have Metallica. Like, to me, if you told me that, you know, that Joe Lacob personally already booked Beyonce for opening night, like, that feels like it fits the occasion more than Metallica does.
Yeah, but what, do they got some backup dancers at the press conference?
Performance will
Beyonce
be in attendance.
Is not there.
So,
I mean, what are they going to have, Lars suing Napster behind Joe Lacob?
I think you could get this one of the boys to come down from Marin, one of the guys from Metallica, to pop in over the bridge for a press conference. Yeah.
Damon, it's going to be Train.
Yeesh.
Oh, God.
You know, that's possible.
Somebody said John Mayer, but I did think about Dead & Company. I just don't know if that's quite big enough.
I know. We'll find out.
Name recognition-wise.
It would play well. It would play better here in the Bay Area than it did internationally.
That's true.
That's true.
Number three.
Could have gotten Rat Dog, by the way.
It's probably very important for our top NFL insiders to be available 24/7 to get all this information out to us because we appreciate it. And of course, it's how we get a lot of our breaking news. But sometimes it happens in some interesting places. For example, Adam Schefter having to take a call while he was in the middle of a live television interview with Scott Van Pelt. Take a listen.
Someone's calling.
Not, yeah, am I taking or not?
You do what you want to do.
Hold on a second. I got to take this. Hold on.
Right. Wait. You want to turn his mic off. Mic off. Not a hot mic.
Okay.
Not a hot mic. You can call him back.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. What are we doing?
Okay, so Le'Veon Bell, ready?
Yeah.
Hold on.
Right.
Hold on, hold on, hold on.
All right. Talk
about
yourself.
Vamp for a second.
I was a minute ago. This is compelling.
Yeah, hold on.
All right. Tweeting, texting.
See, Adam Schefter, he doesn't know what medium he's on.
Here we go.
Right,
numbers.
Here we go.
Le'Veon Bell, 4 years, $52.5 million with the Jets.
So not only did he take the call, get the information, he had to send out a tweet immediately in the middle of a live television interview.
He tweeted before he told Scott Van Pelt
yes,
the numbers?
He wanted, that was his info to put out first.
Wow. By the way, if that doesn't show you where we are in 2019, this man is live on television,
live
on set, and he feels that he needs to feed the Twitter beast at the exact same time he satisfies the television obligation. That to me is nuts.
Here's what stands out to me. That's 100% a text from a GM or owner.
Oh, for sure.
Because it's an old man. There's no young man. This is not some like lower level assistant source because you just text. That's an over 60.
True.
All right.
That's a very good point. Very, very good point.
So that's coming from the top. That's word from the top to Schefty.
Number four.
Okay, I have to play this game-winning goal from the Sharks. Randy Hahn on the call here.
And now Myers on a break with Pavelski. Myers, Pavelski, he scores! They're going to do it again! The Sharks score! Joe Pavelski with 3.6 seconds to go. They're going to win in Winnipeg.
NBC Sports California, Fear the Finn, great play, great call.
That's fine.
That was pretty dope.
It was fantastic
call. It was awesome.
Absolutely fantastic call. Big win, last second goal, a win in Winnipeg, so you got a little alliteration right there. Randy Hahn is good at this, there's no doubt. And by the way, let's just say, Jamie Baker, his partner, has just come clean with his personal demons and his thoughts of suicide and whatnot. It's quite a compelling piece. It's to be read if you're interested in this, and it's a spotlight on mental health issues that certainly are needed these days.
Yeah, good for him and all the people who've spoken out on that sort of stuff over the last couple years. And as far as the call, we're really lucky around here with our announcers in general. The Bay Area has a bunch of really, really good broadcasters.
Yes, we are. We're very lucky.
Not the least
Hello.
Of which, of course. That's right.
Hello.
Now, we are absolutely ridiculously spoiled when it comes to broadcasters and play-by-play talent and the people that we get to listen to on the radio, present company included.
Yeah.
And present company needs to get out of the way because we've got Warriors Live coming up.
Yes, exactly.
We'll save the other fives for tomorrow. Just want to say thanks to Anthony Slater and Sarin Petro for joining us here on a Warriors Wednesday. Brought to you by Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay Area since the Deuce, 1922. And by Great Clips, proud partner of the Golden State Warriors. Thank you very much, Matt Kolsky.
My pleasure.
Good hanging out with you today. Thank you very much, Albie, Elena, and Gianna.
Demon.
Thank you very much. Warriors Live. Do they need to win? Is it a must win? It's Warriors Rockets, so it's supposed to feel big. Hopefully it does for them when they go out and play. No Durant. We got Warriors Live coming up next. In the meantime, please do remember. Ooh, we got a listener said he has an inside scoop and Metallica will be the first band to chase.
Hey!
All right, that's tasty.
We'll see.
I'll be at that show. Sports don't build character. They reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.